Good evening, gentlemen. We are about to embark in the Gemara in Ksubas. We're starting at the bottom of Chasam Beis, but really we're gonna it's only a few words over there. It's really the Amud of Tesamad Aleph we're going to be looking at tonight. The Amud of Tesamad Aleph requires a little bit of introduction. It is perhaps the hardest Amud in the entire Masechta, and one of the hardest in all of Shas, perhaps. What is more, is that it is so involved and intricate, and at once both technical and lumdish, very involved and very difficult. We'll tackle it as best we can in the amount of time provided. Perhaps, if need be, we will stretch it over the course of more than 1 week. Let's start with an introduction to the concepts that we're going to be discussing on Tesamad Aleph. You may remember when we first started the Masechta on Beis Amad Aleph, many of these concepts came up, and we are now going to revisit them in perhaps more detail. When a man has a claim against a woman's virginity, and that is a concept that we discussed on several occasions, both on Beis Amad Aleph and beyond, through into the Masechta, there are essentially two potential claims he may have. Claim number one is that there was no blood, there was no dam, and if there's no blood on the sheets, that's an indication that she's not a virgin, and because of the fact, again, because of the way marriage is like a kinyan, and he's marrying someone who he thought was a virgin, and now she's not a basula, so then he is entitled sort of to essentially what is really an annulment, the mekach tov. It becomes as if the marriage is void. Similarly, if during intercourse he gets the impression that she is what is called a pesach pesuach, an open door, which is somewhat of a euphemism, whether or not there is any blood, he is still able to make a claim. However, such a claim is far less substantiable, because of the fact that there's no sheet with or without blood on it. It's simply his word against hers. Let's take this a step further. Under what conditions would she in fact... Let me restart that sentence. What difference does it make if he's right? What difference does it make if he has a claim against her being a basula? He'll say, I thought I married somebody who was a basula, and now she turns out that she's not. So what? That's a subject of some debate, but one thing we can certainly say is that if he marries a woman thinking she's a basula, and now she is not, if she was with another man during the time of their betrothal, during the time of their kedushin, before the nesuin, that would render her usher to him. She would now be prohibited to him under the rule of Sota. A married woman who has an affair is usher to her husband. Her husband is no longer allowed to stay married to her. And even if that was only the in-the-middle state of marriage of Kedushin, where he is not yet able to be with her, but neither is any other man, that's enough. Because the whole idea of Kedushin is, in fact, to sort of be Mekadesh her, to sort of set her aside specifically for him. And therefore, any other man who is with her during that time has committed Eishes Ish, and she similarly has committed adultery, and therefore her husband is no longer allowed to be with her. However, just because a man thinks he's marrying a basula and it turns out that she is in fact what's called a ba'ula, a woman who's already been with another man, that doesn't mean that that happened while she was together with her current husband in terms of Kedushin. It could have happened perhaps years earlier before the betrothal was even ever a thought. And if that was the case, that would not render her usher to him, in which case we have to question, so what's the difference? Whether or not she's a basula or a ba'ula. Granted, he thought she was a basula, but so what? And the answer is that perhaps if it is what's called a mekach tos, that may render the marriage void. However, what it may do instead of rendering the marriage void, and this is already a concept we're not going to see in such clarity for another couple of blah, it may simply change the terms of her ksuba. Of course, if the ksuba has very detailed terms, it may not matter, unless, of course, the megathos enables the groom to renege. But assuming the groom is not able to renege, or chooses not to, and in terms of the ksuba were not clearly spelled out, there's a standard amount presumed for a ksuba between a man and a wife, and that standard depends on whether the woman is a besula or a beula, whether she's ever been with a man before or not. If she has not, then the standard is 200, and if she has, the standard is 100. It is very possible that if he discovers after marrying her that she was not the besula that he thought she was, that may simply change the terms of her ksuba to 100 from 200. Okay, that already is a little bit beyond the scope of tonight's discussion, and we'll get back to that a little bit later. However, there's a further step. Even if she was not, or I should say, even if she was already mekudash to him, even if she was already betrothed to him, she could still be permitted to her husband despite the rule of Sota if what happened was that she was raped. If she had been raped and it was against her will, then we don't say that she's usher to her husband. Rather, whether or not it may be a mekachtos, again, is a little bit of a discussion for another evening. But in the meantime, what is true is that he's still allowed to stay married to her unless he is a Kohen. If he is a Kohen, the rules for Kohanim are slightly different. And if he is a Kohen, even if she got raped and it was completely against her will, if that happened while they were Mekudosh to each other, he's still not allowed to be with her at that point and has to divorce her. With these ground rules in place, let us embark upon Daf Tes Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Elazar, it says the bottom of Ches Amud Beis, and then on to the Daf Tes Amud Aleph, Omer Pesach Pesuach, a man who claims that there was a Pesach Pesuach, Matzasi, that I found a Pesach Pesuach, that I found a woman whose hymen had already been broken, Ne'eman La'osra Alav, he is believed to prohibit her upon him. What exactly does that mean to prohibit her upon him? Let us take a look at Rashi. Homer Pesach Pesuach Matzasi. V'tayin Adam Einlo. So we discussed there are two potential claims a man can have. He does not, however, in this instance, have the claim that there was no blood on the sheet. Kigon Shehimi Mishpachas Dorkti. Because if she's, for example, Rashi explains, how could such a case occur at all? If she's from the family of what's called Dorkti, She'en Lahan Dam Besulim, they apparently had something in their genetic makeup that they did not bleed when they became virgin, when they stopped being virgins. K'tilakaman, O Shenevdo Imenu Mapa, or that for some reason the cloth, the sheet, was lost. V'lo Yoda Imhayo Dam in Love, and he doesn't know if there was blood or not. Avozol's brurulo, but this much he knows. Shepezach pasuach matzah. Rashi has to explain that even if the sheet was lost, maybe he still knows. And if he knows, then he can claim that just as much as he can claim pesach pasuach. Either way, it's his word against hers. And the answer is that for some reason, perhaps he just simply doesn't know. So now he has this claim. Rashi says, Ne'eman la'osra alav. He's believed to prohibit her upon himself. Now that language of la'osra alav is very significant. Rashi says, "Va'afal pi she'ina davar zayachol lizbar el alpiv." Even though this matter is not able to be clarified except through his word, "Legabe nafshei havi mehemen." Regarding his own status, he is believed l'shavi alecha tichud yisura, to cast upon himself a piece of iser, a piece of prohibition. "Avol afshid ksubas lo mehemen," but to make her lose out from her ksuba, he is not believed. In other words, when a man makes such a claim against a woman, there are two potential ramifications. One ramification is whether or not he's allowed to be with her again. or whether he has to divorce her. And then another ramification is whether or not he is obligated to give her any kind of ksuba if he chooses to divorce her, any kind of an alimony. Rashi is telling us that the lashon of nem and la'osra alav is telling us that he's only believed regarding creating that status of isra between him and her, however, not to make her lose out on her ksuba. And if at that point he would choose to divorce her, which of course if he's successful in creating this isra, he would have to, then in fact he would still have to give her a ksuba. Now, just to clarify, this idea of chaticha de isura works in such a way, it has such a significant halachic status, that if he's believed to answer her against him, he can then no longer renege and retract. It's not like it's up to him on any given day to choose. Once he makes this claim in Beis Din, it's in the books. And even if we don't believe him regarding her losing out on her ksuba and her status regarding anybody else, nevertheless, he still is not allowed to be with her at that point, from that point on. We're going to see on Tez on the Days that there's actually a person who argues and says the opposite, that he's not only believed to create this sort of prohibition between him and her, create this isser, but is also believed regarding making her lose out on Aksuba. Now the Gemara brings in another concept that we did not discuss and deserves a little bit of introduction, and that's the concept of Sfeik Sfeika. The concept of Sfeik Sfeika is essentially what we would call, I guess, a majority, but it doesn't quite do it justice. A Sfeik Sfeika is essentially when one has two different doubts about a particular situation. And because of the fact that there are two doubts, two questions, therefore the interplay of that creates four possible scenarios. If three of those four possible scenarios are going to sort of land in a heter, meaning it's a suffix. I have two doubts. I have two questions. And each question is a question of iser v'heter, usser or mutter. But when I sort of play them off against each other, I end up with three out of four scenarios being mutter. That's a basis to proceed as if it's in fact mutter completely. Let's illustrate this with an example. Let us say that there's a piece of meat, and I'm unsure whether or not it came from a kosher butcher shop. And the way we would say it is as follows then. I'm unsure if it came from a kosher butcher shop. And even if it did not, perhaps there's some other way for it to be kosher. It's a pretty bad example, I apologize. Let's try that again. Let's use our example that we're going to use in a minute. The Gemara says, Safek tachtav, safek ein tachtav. It's a sveik sveikahu. Well, let's introduce it as a question. The amai. The Gemara doesn't understand why this halacha should be true. Sveik sveikahu. Safek tachtav, safek ein tachtav. The intim zelomer tachtav, safek bonus, safek baratzon. In other words, there's some question whether or not this, her status being changed from a virgin to not, happened while they were betrothed, during the Kedushin. And even if it did, maybe it was bonus, maybe she was raped. In which case, anyway, she would be mutter. So we have two questions here. Was it a rape or not? Was it by force or not? And did it happen during the Kedushin or not? Only in the case that both qualifications are satisfied, that it was not a rape and that it was during the Kedushin, is her husband going to be ushered to her. But if you have scenarios, which are all saying that would be mutter, for example, if it was during the Kedushin but it was a rape, if it was not during the Kedushin and it was a rape, or if it was by choice but it was before the Kedushin. In all those three situations, the husband is still allowed to be with his wife. There's still a heter in that case. So the Gemara wants to apply the rules sake and say, in this instance, why is the husband able to create this iser? He shouldn't be able to. So the Gemara answers, lo, tzricha be'eshes kohen. The halacha, you're right, essentially the Gemara is saying, that halacha would not be relevant in a case of tzveik, and a husband would not even be believed regarding his own status of iser to this woman who was his wife. He would not even have the capability to aser himself if it was a case where there was a tzveik. Tzricha, we need to teach me this halacha for a case of Be'eshes Kohen with the wife of a Kohen, and that rules out one of the Sveikos because, as we discussed, a woman who is the wife of a Kohen, if she's Mizana even by force, if she is with another man even as a rape, she's still not allowed to be with her husband after that. And therefore, there's only one question involved. Was it Tachtav or not? And if it was Tachtav, regardless of whether it was a rape or not, she's going to be ushered to her husband. And therefore, it's a single suffix. And in a single suffix, a man can create can shavya nafshi chaticha dizur, can create the status of Israel on himself. Viva Isema. And the Gemara gives another potential answer. Be'eshes Kohen, Be'eshes Yisrael, by the wife of Yisrael, which is what we were assuming all along. Chagon, for example, the kavel ba'avu kedushin p'chus mi'baskim al-shan b'yom echad. Her father accepted Kedushin for her when she was less than 3 years and 1 day old. Why is that significant? Because Chazal tell us that the hymen will sort of regrow before she turns three. And therefore, the only way for her to be a Be'ula at this point in time is if she was Mizana Tachtav, as if she was with another man while there was Kedushin, and therefore the only question is Onas or Ratzon. If it's Onas, then she's Mutter. If it's Ratzon, then she's Aser. Therefore, in the case, again, of a single Safek, we allow the man to say Shavya Nafshi Chaticha Disur, and to make such a claim, does in fact Aser her to him. Let's take a look at what Rashi has to tell us. V'amai, the Gemara, Rashi says, V'amai mitzur ala, why is she ushered to him, afilu yime hemenas le denivala, even if he's believed, safek tachtav mishinis arsazin, so maybe it happened after the arisin, after the kedushin, safek ein tachtav, ala kodim mishinis arsazin, so maybe it was before the kedushin, safek ba'onas, v'anusa sharia be'eshis yisrael, kidlakaman nevi'ilu nisbasa. So the Gemara answered, one answer be'eshis kohen, she ha'onas aser ba, that rape is asked by her, hilko chad safiku, therefore it's only one safik. Was it before or not? Kuzmi baskim oshanim, v'achshav hi gedolo. And now she is a gedolo, upitui upitui. And her pitui is in fact a pitui, ve'en onas, and it's not an onas, hilko chad safik iga. Therefore, there's only one safik. We'll return to that, those first couple lines in a minute. Safik onas, safik ratzon. There's no question of whether it was Tachtav or not. If it happened before Tachtav, before their Kedushin happened, her hymen would return. It's compared to a person putting a finger in an eye where the tears come, but because of the irritation to the eye, but then of course tears can further come again and the eye heals itself. That first line was a reference to the idea that a girl less than 12, even if she's with a man in the situation of what's called baratzon, willingly, we don't view it as baratzon. We view it as if she was seduced. And that seduction is considered a case of onus. Not actual rape, of course. It's sort of statutory. But because of the fact that we view it as statutory rape, therefore she would still be mutter to her husband because we know for sure that it was rape. And of course, in all situations of rape, again, if we're dealing with a person who's Yisrael, a husband who's Yisrael, she's still going to be mutter to her husband. So it has to be a case, which this is a little bit unusual, where her father accepted Kedushin for her, which can happen, when she's less than 3 years old, and the Nisuin was not done until after she was already a Gedola, after she was 12. So this is a betrothal that lasted at least 9 years. In such a situation, the only question is, was she with another man after that time? After she was 12. Well, and even if it was after she was 12, the question is, was it onus or was it ratzon? Of course, before that, it would always be considered onus. Okay, let's proceed. This these concepts are very downbagging, we might say. So you might ask, Ma'akam Ashpon, what is this coming to teach us? What is the chiddush of this line in of Rabbi Elazar? So you know, we already learned it once. So Omer le'isha kidesh ticha, if a person says to a man, I already married you, v'hi omer es lo kidesh tani, and she says, no, you did not. So there seems to be some dispute between this man and this woman whether they are married or not. The man says they are, the woman says they are not. He muteres b'krovav. She is permitted to marry his relatives, who, if they had been married, would be arayas to her, meaning a woman is not allowed to be married to her ex-husband's brother, even after they get divorced. So, however, in this instance where there's a dispute if they were ever married, she's allowed, because she maintains that they were not married, she's allowed to marry his relatives, who also b'krovav said, but he is now not allowed to marry her relatives, because again, a man is not allowed to marry his wife's sister even after they're divorced if his wife is still alive, or his ex-wife is still alive. And I guess that's really true even if they're married at the same time, that issue is in place, because theoretically a man could have more than one wife, but not if they're sisters. However, if the first wife is dead, he's allowed to. So the Gemara says, Ma'al detema. So if we see that this halacha was already taught, so we see that a man has the capability to be believed regarding making a woman asur to himself. In that instance, it was not the woman with whom he was married, it was the woman who was a relative of the woman he married. But in any event, we see that ability, that a man has that kind of believability. Now, with the Tema, the Gemara says, what would I have thought if I only had that statement of Homer Le'isha, but not of a larger statement? Hasam Devadai Kimle. There, he for sure knows. He's confident that he already married this woman. Why she's in dispute of it? So perhaps maybe somebody's lying. But he's confident, he knows. And in a case where a person is confident, is making a claim, and says they know, then that's when we would allow that rule of Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Yisura to take effect. Aval Hacha, but here, make him who's Lokimle. He's not so sure. He couldn't specify himself because he believes there's more to the story than meets the eye, and he wants some clarification. He's making the claim. He's saying, I believe I was with my wife and she was already with someone else based on what I felt. However, he may not be positive. Kamashmal on the Gemara says where it's coming to teach us, and then no, he is in fact positive enough that we can give him that kind of believability. Let's take a look at Rashi Aval Hacha. In the Gemara's question, the Gemara is saying Aval Hacha, but here, by our case, Ema, I would say, before Balazar came along, Mitok Shepanoihada, because he's single, Ve'eno Baki, and he's no expert in these kind of matters, you know, in having relations, make him Hudlo Kimle. He's therefore unable to be certain. He may think that what he found is a Pesach Pesuch, but in fact it is not the case. And therefore she should not be ushered to him, Kamash Malan, that in fact she is ushered to him based on his pronouncement that he believes he found a Pesach Pesuch. Now there are two Tosfosim, which are really where the meat and potatoes of this Sugya are, towards the bottom of Tesamet Aleph. One which starts Lo Tzricha Be'eshes Kohen, and one which starts V'ibayis Eima Be'eshes Yisrael. And in both instances, in both of those Tosfosim, Tosfos explores the various possibilities that still exist even after Gemara's answer, which should still present us with what's called a Seif Sveika, right? This idea that we discussed. And he's bringing in concepts from elsewhere in Shas to discuss this idea of what is considered sveika and what is not. Let's take a look at the first one first. As they say, first things first. And we'll see where that takes us. Tosfos says, Lo tzricha beishes kohen. The Gemara gave that answer that we need the halacha to be taught even though most cases would be sveika. There are some cases which are not sveika. For example, Tenacious kohen. And then in that case, he would be believed. Tosfos says, V'in Tomar, V'nukma achez kasa shehikshera l'kuhuna, V'neimad lav tachtav zinsa. Another famous concept we have in Shas is the idea of chazaka. The idea of a previously established status maintaining the status quo when there's a doubt. For example, if there's some question if a pot is kosher or treif, as a result, and we're unsure if something happened to make it treif, if we know that in the past it was kosher and we don't know for sure that something happened to it, we say that the pot is still kosher until we know for a fact that it became treif. That's the idea of maintaining the status quo until we know for sure that we have to dispute it. In this instance, this woman has a chazaka, a previously established status, that she is in fact kosher to a kohen. In other words, until anything had occurred, her entire life, there was no reason to suspect that she was not allowed to marry a kohen. Some women, in fact, are not allowed to marry a kohen, but this woman was not. And if she had been with another man, perhaps she might not be, depending on the circumstances behind it. However, she had a previously established status that we have no reason to question, that she is allowed to marry a kohen. And therefore, we should use that established status to say lav tachtav zinsa, that she did not, she was not with another man after the kedushin had happened. In other words, of course we know that it doesn't matter if it's onus or ratzon, because she's the wife of a kohen, and therefore, rape or not, if she was with another man after kedushin, she's not allowed to be with her husband. However, we don't know if it was before or after the kedushin happened, and if it was before the kedushin, she would be allowed to be with her husband. And chazaka works in a very funny way. Chazaka says we maintain the status quo, but ordinarily, that maintaining the status quo is simply a function of, well, we don't know what happened, and we know the status of the pot beforehand, let us therefore maintain the status. However, in this instance, when we look at the way it applies itself here, it seems a little bit funny, because the chazaka was that she's kosher to a kohen. But how is the fact that she had a status of being kosher to a kohen able to tell us that lav tachta zinsa, that the znus happened before the kedushin? The two things seem to be completely unrelated. If her status as being kosher tikuna was being challenged simply on its own merits, and we could say, well, we never had reason to question it before, why should we question it now? That would be fine, but the way we're questioning it here is by saying that we know something happened, so maybe it happened when it was tachta, maybe it happened after the kedushin. As opposed to in the case of the pot, where we're unsure if anything happened at all, and therefore we should maintain the status quo, here we know something happened. If we know something happened, we just don't know when, so how should it be that the fact that she was kosher tikuna before enable us to sort of maintain that status quo and say, well, it must have happened at this time? The two things have nothing to do with each other. I believe the answer is, and many of the Achronim discuss this, if you're interested in looking at just how long a particular Achron can write on any one topic, take a look at the Pnei Yeshua, among others, who writes extensively on just the Amud of Tesamud Aleph. Many, many, many pieces. At first it seems almost like, oh, this is not so bad, there's not so many pieces here, but he goes and goes and goes, and some of the pieces are long, some of the pieces are short, but there are certainly many in any event, and some of them are in fact quite long. And many of the Achronim conclude that the way Chazaka works is in fact to do just that. That although it doesn't seem to make sense, because Chazaka tells us maintain the status quo, we maintain that status quo even in an instance where it doesn't seem to be logically sound, such as here. Even though it doesn't seem to make sense, our maintaining the status quo should not help us to resolve this doubt of whether or not it was before the condition or after the condition. We know that that's what she was before, but now we know her status has changed and we don't know when it changed. So how should the fact that her status was good tell us that her status changed at a certain time? The answer is Chazaka works that way. Chazaka is able to, as we say in Yeshiva, Chazaka is able to make that speech. Chazaka is able to say, no, this is when it occurred. This occurred before the condition happened. And therefore, does is applying this rule of Chazaka in this case. So Tosis gives an answer, because what's bothering Tosis essentially is that now, if that's the case, if there's this rule of Chazaka in place, why is he able to asser her to him, at least within sort of his own parameters regarding himself. He shouldn't be able to do even that, because even though there's no seikseika, granted it's only a single suffix, however, there is a rule of chazaka. Tosfos answers via Shlomar, the adraba, just the opposite. Islam the Maimar the Hashtanavala. We should say that now, and when Tosfos says now, he means just before any doubt arose, that's when these nos happened. Tosfos is bringing in another chazaka. Cheskas haguf. This idea of cheskas haguf is as follows. We know that for the first however many years of her life, she was a basula. We assume that that status remained unchanged until the last possible second. If we know that it was changed before the marriage occurred, so then obviously whenever the last possible second it is supposed to have happened, that's when it happened. However, we don't assume it happened even a second before that. And therefore, that tells us that it must have happened what's called tachtav, after the kedushin. The tricky part of this tosis, and this is where the sugya really opens up, is the fact that what exactly is Tosis unsure of? He has a question, and therefore he gives an answer. What was what we call his havamina? What was his maskana? What was he thinking beforehand? What changed? It's very important to realize that Tosis had a well-developed model of how chazaka worked throughout Shas. In the entire Talmud, Tosis had an understanding, and because of this Gemara here, he's changing that entire understanding of the way chazaka works in many, many places. Now that change may not be significant, it may be only a slight small fulcrum upon which the idea of chazaka hinges. However, something did change. Something which allowed the idea of cheskas haguf, an opening, to say, no, there's no sense to have happened tachtav after the kedushin, and therefore she was still a basula when the kedushin occurred. One of the, just to give an idea of how sort of crazy and wild the sugya can get, one of the approaches to this tosis that's presented amongst the Achronim in terms of having a havamin and having a maskana is the idea that she had a chazaka that she was kasher l'kahuna. However, when we have this idea of cheskas haguf combating it, the cheskas haguf doesn't win. When you have one chazaka against another chazaka, it's really far more than that. It's really a question of the cheskas haguf combining itself with the fact that there's a suffix in the first place, preventing the cheskas kashrus from sort of overturning that doubt. See the Pnei Yeshua for further elucidation. However, that's one explanation that's given for this Tosfos. Let's take a look now back at the Gemara. The Gemara had attacked why Rabbi Elazar's statement was needed, and we gave an answer why it was needed despite the existence of this other statement of Shavya Nafshei Chaticha D'Yisura, this idea of a person being able to make a claim which could create an Isra on himself. But however, this is different because here you would have thought that maybe he's sort of unable to be certain. Rabbi Elazar is telling us that in fact a person is able to be certain enough for the rule of Shavya Anafshei Chaticha D'Yisura to apply. Now the Gemara challenges as follows. Umi Amar Rabbi Elazar Hachi. Did Rabbi Elazar ever say this? In other words, granted there could be room for such a statement to make sense and be true despite the previous existence of this other statement of Homer Leisha, but is Rabbi Elazar in fact the owner of such a concept? V'homer Rabbi Elazar, didn't Rabbi Elazar say Ein ha'isha ne'aseres al baila el al iske kine yustira, that a woman is only asher to her husband, and this is regarding a woman who has committed adultery, a woman who is a sota, is a woman only asher to her husband through what's called kinui, where he was jealous and therefore gave her a warning against being with a particular person if he had reason to be suspicious, was stira. And when there ate him that the woman was enclosed, had yichud with that particular person. Ukumaisa Shaya, and like the event that happened, which Rashi is going to explain to us what it was. Rashi tells us, Umi Omer Rabbi Elazar, what exactly is the Gemara's problem? It seems like the Gemara is bothered by the two statements of Rabbi Elazar not jiving with each other. Rashi tells us, Umi Omer Rabbi Elazar, the Isha Mizana Asaras Alpi Baila, that a woman who commits adultery can become usher based on what her husband says. But rather, the Gemara's quote says that Rabbi Elazar was only saying that a woman can be usher to her husband based on these ideas of kinui yustira. Simply the husband saying something, making a claim, is not enough. Kinui, Rashi says, sha'amar la al tistri imploni, that she says, do not seclude yourself with so-and-so. Mustira, shavo edim, that witnesses come to testify, shenistra imo achar kinui, that she was in fact secluded with him, did do yichud with him after the kinui. Ukamaisa shahaya, Rashi tells us, to Bas Sheva. This is the incident of David and Bas Sheva, where David saw Bathsheba bathing, David HaMelech saw Bathsheba bathing on a roof, and he had her brought to the palace and lived with her. It's a very, very unclear and hard to understand Maisa in our history, and it's something that should certainly not be presumed to be understood without much research. In any event, that's the basic idea of what happened. Rashi says Vitizbara. Excuse me, let's look back at the Gemara. The Gemara says Vitizbara. And does that make sense to ask such a contradiction within Rabbi Elazar? Ma'isa Shahaya b'kinu yustira. Was that Ma'isa Shahaya, that incident that happened with David and Bathsheba, with kinu yustira? Did Bathsheba's husband Uriah, did he in fact warn her against being together with David? There no such warning ever took place. And certainly there was no witnesses to the seclusion of David and Bathsheba after such a warning, when no such warning took place again. Va'od, so furthermore, first of all, the Gemara challenges how does this statement seem to make sense at all in the first place, the way the Gemara seems to be understanding it at first. Va'od, mi'asrua. And furthermore, did she in fact become usher to her husband? That's Irashi. In that Maisa, was there any kinui where Uriah warned her against being with David? Va'od mi'asrua al Uriah. Who assered her, not who, literally, but did she become usher to Uriah? Di'ilu na'asra al Uriah, that we know that can't be true, because if she had become usher to Uriah, na'asra afal David, she would have then become usher even to David. The kainulam that we pass in kishem sha'asur al-ba'al kachasur al-ba'al. There is a rule by Sota that it's just like a man can no longer be with his wife after she has had an affair. The person she had an affair with also is not allowed to be with her ever again. And in this case, that would be David HaMelech. So the Gemara answers, Halo Kasha. That's not a question. How's it going? This is how we can explain that statement of Rabbi Elazar. Ein ha'isha na'aseres al-baila. A woman is not usher to her husband, Ella al iske kinu yustira, unless there is this element of both kinu and stira, mimaisa shahaya. As we learn from the event that happened with David HaMelech and Bathsheba, the lohava kinu yustira, that there was not kinu yustira in that case, velo itzer, and she did not become usher. In other words, we see from over there that she was still mutter to both Uriah and David after the event. And there was no kinui. So obviously, a woman only becomes usher to her husband when you do have that element of kinui. But if you don't have it, we see by David HaMelech, then she's not usher. So the Gemara says, Mikol Malkum Kasha. Nevertheless, there's a question. Kinui is theorin, that it sounds like the only time she can become usher to her husband is through this way of kinui is theorin, having been warned and then witnesses to the seclusion of her and with this other man. But we can make an inference that which implies that by a case of Pesach Pesuach, where he claims that there was Pesach Pesuach, that would not be enough for him to make her usher to him. But yet, Rabbi Elazar's earlier statement at the top of the page said that she could in fact do such, that he could, excuse me, he could in fact do such a thing simply by claiming Pesach Pesuach. So the Gemara retorts, well, but according to your reasoning, the way you're reading this the statement of Rabbi Elazar, Kinyu Sira in Eidim Lo. We could make a similar inference that which says that she can't be, that she can only become Asur based on him warning her and being secluded with another man, but not if there was simply Eidim who testified that she was with another man. Right? The difference between the two cases being that in one case, witnesses testify simply to her seclusion with another man. In a regular classical case of Eidim, Eidim see her and the man actually committing adultery, see the actual act taking place. Not simply that they went into a room together and then came out later. And of course, we know that's preposterous. If there were Eidim to her act of committing adultery, of course that would create that iser between her and her husband. So of course we can't read it literally that a woman only becomes usher through kinyan yastira, because we know that's not true. There is a case of Eidim where witnesses testify that she in fact committed adultery, she of course would become usher. So too by Pesach Pesuach, perhaps we can't read this statement of Rabbi Elazar so literally. So rather, how would we read the statement of Rabbi Elazar? Ela hachikamar. Rather, it's to be read as follows. A woman does not become usher to her husband with one aid. Rather, it has to be with two aidim, two witnesses who saw the ma'isa, who saw what happened. The kinyan yastira, and in other words, we're kind of putting a lot of words into the statement of Rabbi Elazar that a woman only becomes usher to her husband through kinyan yastira. That only happens, the only time a woman can become usher to her husband in a situation where there's only one witness, if it's a situation where there's kinyan yastira, the kinyan yastira afilu beid echad, that can happen even with one aid. In other words, a woman cannot become usher to her husband with one aid, it has to be two aidim. Unless you have kinyan yastira, unless you have that warning and then the seclusion of aidim, and then one aid seeing, one witness seeing the actual adultery would be enough. Upesach pasuach, and the idea of him claiming Pesach Pesuach, a claim against her virginity, Kishnei Eidim Dami, that's considered like two witnesses saying they saw her commit adultery. Let's take a look at Rashi here. Rashi says, Ein ha'ishin ha'aseres al baila b'yed echad. This is the Rashi about... 10 lines up in the Rashi lines. The Yol of Davar Davar Mimamon, that we learn out Davar Davar Mimamon, that's a special drasha that teaches us you need two Eidim. V'kina yustira, im yesh Eidim shekina la, v'yesh Eidim shenistir achar kina, if there are Eidim that he warned her and witnesses that she was secluded with this person after the warning, because again, every event in this series has to have two witnesses to verify its accuracy, otherwise it is an event that halachically did not happen. Afilu b'yed echad, Rashi says, Afilu ein betum ela yed echad, even if there was not in the impurification only one aid. In other words, even if during the actual act of adultery only one witness saw it, Naaman, the husband still believed to claim she committed adultery, dechsiv v'eid ein ba, because this is a complicated drasha, which is that the pasuk says, by one of the prerequisites of Sotah, that there shouldn't be an aid. So the word aid in the Torah, even though it's literally singular, is a reference to two aidim. And therefore we say that the case of Sotah is the case where she didn't have two aidim, but she did have one. It's kind of ironic that it should mean that when the word the Torah uses is singular, but that is in fact how we read the pasuk. But the Torah is telling us that there's not aid. Trey, she doesn't have two witnesses, elachad, rather one witness, v'hilo nispasa, and she's not literally grabbed, there aren't witnesses verifying that she for sure was together with this other man, asura, still she's asur sharaglai in the davar, there's sort of evidence, circumstantial evidence indicating shazinsa, that she was committed adultery, Sharikinala, that he warned her, Vinister, and that she secluded the aid echad meida she tmeya, and one aid testifies, one witness testifies that she did in fact commit adultery. Umehashta, and Rashi explains how this answers our question. Lo tikshi lach de Rabbi Elazar. No longer do you have a question on Rabbi Elazar, the Pesach Pesuach, lo osur al atzmo kishneidim dami, because we can now say, since Rabbi Elazar made this distinction within his first statement, although it was a very, very implied distinction and very not spelled out, but nevertheless the distinction is still there. between one witness and two witnesses. And we can put the idea of Pesach Pesuach, him claiming Pesach Pesuach, into the camp of two witnesses. Why is that true? Rashi tells us Shahari Davar Baruch Hu Loshin Nivalo, because the thing is clear to him. Therefore, when he says it, and we apply the rule of Shavya Nafshi Chatita Disura, it's as if two witnesses are proclaiming something which gives her that status of Asur to him. But again, in terms of all the ramifications that it has, it's really only relevant to him, because of that Isra, he can no longer be with her, she can still theoretically be with his relatives, for example. And it furthermore does not make her lose out on her alimony. Thus, we have an answer to the stira, the contradiction that we raised within Rav Elazar. And that is, by and large, the end. Really, even earlier was the end of the very difficult part of Tesamid Aleph. And things get a little bit trickier again on Tesamid Beis, but let's take a look at the next few lines here before we finish. And if you'll say, you know what, let's hold it here for this week. We'll continue with the V'chitema next week. It's really kind of a new discussion, and it's going to continue on to Tesamid Beis, and gets into the idea of divorce contracts becoming activated later than they were written. It's a discussion we've had similar to it before, but it's a little bit prolonged and protracted, and let's wait until next week. Have a good week, everyone.